Hey everyone, this is Cliff Beach. Welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Man, I used to go Friday nights in Little Ethiopia and check out one of the hottest jams, Funky Fridays, that was done by bassist Lonnie Marshall, who we get to talk to today. He's here to talk about his band Weapon of Choice and some of his new Mega Nuts singles that he's been dropping this year in 2020. Please help me welcome Lonnie Marshall.
Cliff, how you doing?
I'm good, Lonnie. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Excellent to be able to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. Where are you at, located?
I'm near Culver City. Where are you?
I'm in Hollywood, right in the middle of it.
Hollyweird. I love it.
Yeah.
But you're a native to L.A. You're born and raised here, correct?
Yes, sir. South Central L.A.
Nice, man. Well, super excited to have you on podcast Deeper Grooves today. It'll be real nonchalant, real informal, just kind of giving you really an outlet to speak about whatever you want to talk about. We're going to talk about some of your albums, stuff, Weapon of Choice, stuff you've done outside of there, really just to kind of get people excited and inspired about having such a long history. I think anyone that can last in music as long as people like yourself is a testament to having true grit and perseverance, because I know that it's not easy.
Oh, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. And it's because of people like you that keep people like me going and inspired, you know. So I'm always inspired by my surroundings, and not even necessarily musicians, but especially musicians, but just people in general.
Nice. So let's get into it then. I wanted to chat with you about your last record, Really Relevant. Thanks for sending that stuff over to me. I've been checking it out, as well as some new singles that you've been hitting me up with that have been amazing, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But your mixture of rock and alternative music, funk, hip-hop, jazz, reggae, you coined the term of music genre style, nutmeg. People say it's likened to P-Funk, who I know is a big influence for you. And that was your sixth studio album. So how did it come together, and what was your process? I saw that you had Norwood, who you worked with Trula DeGracia from Fishbone. And you had George Clinton from P-Funk also guest on it. So I just wanted to kind of hear your take on how you were creating that album.
On Really Relevant, that was recorded in 2015, I think. I'm not sure, but somewhere around there. And I pretty much initiated sessions with different people. Like I recorded a couple of the tracks on Really Relevant with a drummer in Texas, Houston, Texas. I was doing some sessions out there. So I would just do sessions around with different people. And I have a studio set up at my place. So some people come by my place and record vocals and stuff. But I do all the editing and everything here. And I was doing sessions with George at the time. I was getting him sessions when he was in town. So he actually did some recording together, and that was one of the songs on there. I think it's called Dog. I don't know if I can say that or not.
No, you can. Say however you want.
Yeah. And then Norwood, I've been knowing for a very long time. So, you know, he's always in the realm. Elizabeth Lee, who's been playing trombone with Weapon of Choice in the most recent years, is on there singing and playing as well. And the actual first song that I ever wrote, when I first started playing bass, the first song I wrote was a riff, and the riff was Headspace. So that's the song on Really Relevant. That was the first riff I ever wrote when I first started playing a long time ago.
How did you get into actually playing bass? I know you mentioned that you're originally from South Central LA, and you got exposed very early to P-Funk. I believe you had a friend whose father worked for them. Is that correct? And
yes, sir.
Majored in music at LA City College. So how did you get into playing bass?
Well, I got into playing bass because when I was in, I was always drawn to the bass, and when I heard Larry Graham, you know, dance to the music and a lot of the Motown stuff, that's when I was growing up, I heard people playing with real vinyl, which has that heart, it connects to the heart chakra, so it was like really making an impact and imprint on me, everything that I heard. My dad used to play the 45s over and over again, so I began to be able to hear and distinguish instruments from each other, you know, and arrangements and stuff like that. I began to absorb it without knowing what it was, you know, and just because I heard it on repetition so much. And the bass I was really drawn to. So I actually played guitar in a recital in elementary. I think I was in third grade or something like that. Played King of the Road on guitar, learned a couple of chords, like three chords, but I used the school's guitar. I didn't have my own guitar. When I finally got a guitar, I played the low strings, the four low strings. But what really impacted me to actually get a bass was, like you said, a friend of my brother and mine's dad worked with P-Funk, and this was at their big heyday for them. We were blessed with the opportunity of being in that environment with them. Like, we got a chance to go around in limos with Bootsy and P-Funk, and we went to the Magic Castle, me and my brothers and a couple other peoples from middle school. I was about like 12 or 13, somewhere around there. So we got a chance to go around. We got a chance with them, and we got a chance to go to the L.A. Funk Festival with Rick James, who I was into, and Confunction, Barquets, Brides of Funkenstein, Parliament, Funkadelic, Bootsy, Parlette, all at the Funk Festival. We got a chance to go backstage, like, and so for me to be able to experience that, and I was like, wow. And then we got a chance to go, we were part of a group called Boot Camp, which was Bootsy, we were youngsters that Bootsy would take photos for teen magazines, like Ride On magazine at the time. So we wore a red Boot Camp t-shirt, but we were like kind of like sidekick type youth represented group for Bootsy, and with Bootsy, and we went on stage with Bootsy at the Funk Festival, and that, like, really, I was like, wow, I think I want to do this. I actually got a chance to pluck Bootsy's E string. I saw his bass in the trailer backstage. So I thought it was going to sound like the record, you know, like with the wah and the Mutron on it. I thought it was going to sound like that. It wasn't plugged in. After that, I was like, I want to do this. And I want to play to write my own music, you know, come up with my own. And that's the first song on Really Relevant that I came up with when I actually got a bass. But the getting the bass, that was a whole nother thing, because I actually had a guitar first, and I played right around the same time I got a guitar first. And the guitar ended up getting taken away from me, to make a long story short. And so I became like driven to get a bass that I saw every day on the way to school in the school bus. I see a green hollow body Greco bass in the window in a pawn shop on the way to school, Mid City Alternative, Adams and Arlington. And so I used to sell guinea pigs. I used to breed and sell guinea pigs. And else, I'd take the bus to El Segundo. I would sell comic books, you know, go to Old Town malls and Downey. I got some help from my mom's, and I got that bass. And I just put myself in the room. I live in South Central. They used to call you homie if you stayed. It didn't mean you were cool. It meant you stayed in the house and you didn't come outside. You know, you weren't cool. He's a homie.
You were just a homebody.
That was cool. Yeah, a homebody, but they call you homie. That's what they called you, homie. And it didn't mean like, oh, yeah, he's my friend. Now it means he's my friend, but back then it means homie. You mean stay, you're a homebody, like you said. So, yeah, I used to stay. I was a homebody. I stayed in the house and practiced from sun up to sundown. You know, I started practicing how to sing, be able to sing and play at the same time when I started playing, and, you know, just figuring out everything that, every bass line that blew me away, I just wanted to figure it out. Like, I did, like Jaco Pastorius, I was, like, figuring out, like, really complex stuff and practicing to a metronome, you know, all the time for hours. It was just like a magical realm that opened up. The more I played and practiced and discovered, it just like opened and continues to open and unfold. I got my bass right next to me. I practice every day still, you know, so that's why this homie, you know, I'm used to being a homie and being resourceful and you know, under our current atmosphere in our environment with quarantines and all this stuff. I'm used to that, and I've been staying productive and playful, which is what I started, how I started doing, and which is what I love, is the play aspect of playing. To play any instrument is play involved. First off is play. If I'm playing anything, I'm playing first. So I love that aspect, and that's what I've been accessing. That's the magical realm, is what I'm discovering, is just play simply is realm to opening a whole new alternate universe.
Definitely a universe that you have created. You know, you're the master of your own fate and the captain of your ship. So you come from a musical family as well. I know that your brother is a guitarist, and you guys had a band actually together. Martial Law had a deal with Island Records back in the day before you started Weapon of Choice. And right around the time you started Weapon of Choice, he was kind of heading out to work with Red Hot Chili Peppers, and later he was in Macy Gray's band. What was it like in the early days of kind of working together and building Martial Law, and then how did that kind of lead you into Weapon of Choice?
Oh, yeah, that's my brother, Arik the Freak, guitar. He's 2 years younger than me, even though he's several inches taller than me. so people usually think I'm the little brother. But, yeah, that's my younger brother. And he saw me practicing and playing and learning. And saw, you know, he was interested. He would come in while I was practicing and asked me to show him some things. So I showed him some chords and how to hold his hands and, you know, some basic technique. And, you know, kept coming in. So at one point he came in and I said, well, take this book and learn the chords in this book. You know, I didn't mean like in one day, but that's what he did. He went in the other room and learned all the chords in the book in one day, pretty much from for hours, you know. So and then we started playing together and putting songs together. We put Martial Law together because we had songs, you know. We would play and just make up songs that were like funny to us, you know. A big part of it was like something that was funny, even if it's a riff or something. It, you know, I like a certain element of something funny, even if it's like not something that's unexpected, you know. It's like some element of humor, even in the music, not necessarily the lyrics, but the lyrics also to have a element of humor. in whatever form, whether it be sarcasm or absurdity, or, you know, or just playful. Yeah, and I was influenced by a lot of different music. You know, I grew up, before I started playing, living in an apartment in 50th and Main in South Central, and there were different ethnic music that I would hear blasting from every apartment around me. So, you know, it's like when you hear music through the wall, you don't know where the one is. So you hear it in a completely different way, you know?
Yeah.
So I was hearing that from several different areas in my environment. And to me, that the musical output, as well as the vibrational altogether, the experience of reality of growing up in South Central. And one of my first images was the military with guns in South Central in my neighborhood, like right down the street from me. And that was one of my earliest images. So I knew this was a nutmeg world when I got here. That was when I was real young. So it's like I felt like I was I was here. I asked to be here somehow, and I have to figure out and discover what it is that I'm here for. So through play, I've been able to teach youth from South Central all over LA and have them present their art and music at House of Blues, Getty Villa, Hammer Museum, Grammy Museum, all over LA through sharing, you know. And it all came from when I started playing bass. Just loving the play aspect of it, especially when my brother, me and him began to interact musically. You know, that play is my favorite thing, is to play and jam. As you're aware of by with the Funky Fridays era and experience.
Oh, yeah, man.
Which you're a part of.
You got a lot of play out there. Speaking of playing, so just to give you all the praise, I like to toss the flowers where people are still with us. And so you performed alongside members of P-Funk, Fishbone, and Julio de Gracias with Norwood Fisher at Fishbone. You were the MC and bassist for Daka. For anyone who never heard that band, my cousin Taisha played viola and Daka. I saw you guys play at Grand Performances. Amazing 65-piece hip-hop orchestra. Love their stuff, and definitely very diverse and very different, representative of the landscape of LA, which you talked about. Then you also recorded and toured with Joe Strummer of The Clash. You actually wrote something on his Earthquake Weather that you played on, a song called Boogie With Your Children. And then you've done stuff with Tone Loc and Ice Cube and George Clinton, Funkadelic, Dion Ferris, obviously from Arrested Development, Perry from Jane's Addiction, Les Claypool from Primus, people from Pearl Jam, your brother. You performed with the Chili Peppers and Clinton at the Grammys in the 90s. You've done stuff with Chaka Khan and Queen Latifah and Corrupt from the Dog Pound and a laundry list of so many amazing, amazing acts. And that's a testament to being such an amazing player, even voted at one time by Bass Player Magazine as one of the top five funk bassists, which is amazing. So how do you feel with all that recognition and just knowing that your playing has touched so many people and has afforded you the opportunities to really be able to showcase your talent with all of these names that we mentioned?
Wow, thank you, bro. Well, I feel completely grateful, most of all. And I feel that since play brought me all of that, then that's what I'm inspired to do today. And, you know, does that make sense?
To kind of
just encapsulate, you know, but the mainly is gratitude. And I feel I feel blessed and honored to have played and been in the presence of many of the people that I've gotten to be and experience being in their realm. It's just been, it's been incredible. And actually Joe Strummer you mentioned from The Clash. I was like, I've gotten to actually play with my musical heroes, people that were actually on my wall. Like, you know, I had P-Funk up there, posters, and George Clinton. I had Bootsy. I had The Clash also, you know, so. But I got an opportunity to play with my heroes, so I feel like it's invaluable to be able to experience that type of thing. It's a magical realm to experience a lot of the things that I've experienced and encounter the people that I've encountered. I feel is a magical realm, and the access has all been through play. So it goes back to play, gratitude and play. And it's just been amazing. And Joe Strummer actually, he gave us writing that song Boogie With Your Children. That was the first session I did with him. It was the first session, the first day. He let me he would come in with a cassette tape of what it just was kind of him mumbling. He would have a lot of lyrics, but he'd kind of like be mumbling, humming, and he'd be strumming acoustic guitar. And me and Xander and Willie at the time, and then Jack Irons came later, but we would figure out some type of arrangement and approach. And then, you know, but this one particular song, Boogie With Your Children, basically we just did what we wanted to do. We interpreted his idea on the cassette that he brought in, and he let me do whatever I wanted to do. If you listen to that record, I'm playing all over the place. I played a lot busier than I did, you know. I learned to get busier, that I don't have to play busy, you know, after that. But he let me do whatever I wanted to do, basically. And he left verses for me to do a duet with him vocally, to sing with him on the song Boogie With Your Children, which is like, what? Am I dreaming this? I was like just dreaming stuff like that, you know, like very, very recent to that, you know. And it just all came from just focusing on play and discipline, seeing the progression of a worthy goal. Which I wanted to get better and be able to play with other people. And also I wanted to create and share something, some insight that could help people and heal people, like the music that I grew up on did for me.
Yeah, and then, you know, as you talk about play, you branch out even outside of music. You had your own public access TV show at one time. Weapon of Choice, the song Nutty Nutmeg Fantasy, was adapted and re-recorded by Macy Gray. That was in the movie for Spider-Man and the soundtrack. And then you also played MC Mad, the dance battle MC, in the opening scene of the film Stomp the Yard. So did you want to act, being from L.A.? Was that something that kind of was a natural extension of the music, or was it more about the music for you?
It was about the music, really. And it's really about the goes back to what you said in the beginning about nutmeg music. You know, I wanted to just be have an alternative space where it can be something that can't be categorized, or as a combination of several different things. It's not just one particular thing that's predictable. It's you know what I mean. And so I wanted it to be a broad thing, and like part of nutmeg is just like, you know, just being spontaneous. That's a part of it, being open to different things and not be so narrow on a particular viewpoint that I don't like when I see an opportunity, someone wants me to act and stomp the yard. I didn't know who Chris Brown was, but the director actually wanted me to play the character. He was into my band at Bell College. They had the Kahootech Festival, and he used to book that. And he became this in years, like several years after that, he was the director of Stomp the Yard with Chris Brown, and he wanted me to play this character, and he wanted me to do whatever I wanted to do. Yeah, that's been a blessing. Like, I mean, that came from play too. Literally everything, even that came from playing. And I was also on the Bette Midler TV show, and I wrote a rap for Bette Midler that we both performed on the TV show. Did you know that one?
I had also heard that. That's cool too. I mean, Bette Midler, amazing star of screen and music, and very well outspoken. I could see that being really cool.
Yeah, that was amazing too. And I was introduced to that because Tony Basil used to come see our band, Weapon of Choice,
nice,
at the Temple Bar a lot. And Tony Basil is like a legendary, influential dance choreographer, artist.
Yeah, Mickey, You're So Fine.
And she did that. Mickey, You're So Fine. And she was in the L.A. Lockers, too, the original Pop Lockers. And you could see her on Soul Train and a bunch of stuff. But she used to direct videos. She choreographed one of Fishbone's videos, too, I think. I think A Problems Arise. She did that one.
Wow.
And she did David Byrne Talking Heads, the Plan A Good Day's Go By, when he's doing that onto his arm, you know, that like chop chop on his arm.
Mm-hmm.
She choreographed that one.
Nice.
She introduced me to, she got me on that Bette Midler TV show for that. And I wrote a rap for Bette Midler. We both did it. It's on YouTube. You could check that one out too. And the first line I showed Bette that I was writing when we were on the set, and it was "Who put the hoe in Hollywood?" And she saw it, she started laughing, and she said, "Yeah, I love it. Keep going."
Oh yeah, that's taking her back to her bathhouse Betty days. A little racy.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Yeah. So musically now, what are you up to? I know we're all doing the. We're all homies, as you said, but you've been releasing some new singles under the Little Big Up recently. You sent that stuff over to me, and that's great. So how's that been going for you?
Oh, it's been going amazing. It's under Meganut,
mm-hmm,
is at on Bandcamp. It's on Spotify, Meganut, and it's been amazing. It's been a magical, miraculous realm. This creating, the act of creating and playing is a magic. It's not a trick. It's just magic. You know, that's what I'm able to experience that, and not even for myself, to for others also as well, and especially for others. I've just been, actually, I'm about to release my 18th song this year that's been written, recorded, and released in 2020. My 18th song is coming up, and I'm going for 20. I got my 18th is coming up on October 30th. It's going to be called Nice Age. And I got another one coming in the month of November called Mind Funk. And it's going to be, when I get to the number 20, it's going to be another album. I already put out one album with 10 songs the beginning months of this year called Cosmic Relief, Groove Healing and Verbal Remedies. The next one is going to be coming soon. So it's been amazing.
Well, that's very prolific during this time. You're definitely maximizing it and taking advantage of the situation. I think that's something that all people should inspire to do. Just do your best, do what you can, and, you know, you still have time to sharpen your skills. And even with social distancing, you know, we have the technology to be able to release new things, and we're glad to hear it. And you kind of have a captive audience to listen to it, too, so that kind of works hand in hand. So we always end our session with two rapid-fire questions to all of our guests. What advice would you give someone that's coming up now musically or just starting out?
To be playful and unstoppable and disciplined. Do something that you may not want to do, like practice, like you love to do it. That's what I heard Mike Tyson said, his coach told him. Or do, you know, about training, was do something like you love to do, like you hate doing, like you love to do it. Practice, and that's it. And when it's something that you're unfamiliar with, that means that you're growing and learning. So just be playful, and remember that it's play is the operative word in playing any instrument. So I don't know too many people that didn't at one point love to play.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to have those fundamentals, the practice, that dedicated discipline day in, day out, whether you feel it or not, getting it done. And you look at someone like a Mike Tyson, outside of music, you know, he's had a career where you can knock out someone in 15 seconds of a fight in the first round. And the only way to do that, you think, oh, he knocked it out in 15 seconds. It's like, yeah, but that took years of practice to be able to build up a body and to know, you know, the fight technique to be able to do something like that. And I think the same way, if you want to knock it out of the park musically, yeah, there's no overnight sensation. There's someone that toiled in the night to be able in the daylight to be so prolific. That definitely comes from practice. Even people that are virtuosos or kind of have it essentially from birth, it still requires practice for everyone with the muscle memory and things like that. So what do you want your musical legacy to be? And I know you got a long road ahead of you, so this might be a question for 30, 40 years from now, but what would you want your, when all is said and done, your musical legacy to be?
That I contributed humor and playful wit and something authentic and original to the world.
Excellent. Well said. I mean, I think definitely looking at your long body of work, you know, from your new stuff coming out now to all of the multiple albums you have with Weapon of Choice and everyone that you've touched, you definitely have done that. And I think you definitely carry the torch from, you know, a group like a P-Funk that also injected a lot of humor and nursery rhymes and nonsensical things into a very fun, keeping that aspect of play, costumes, all of that. I think all of that's important because it makes people feel a certain way, and that's what people remember the most, the way they felt. And when you're playing and the energy and, you know, in the room and how you're feeling about it really kind of translates into the instrument and then out to the audience and then their feeling back to you. So it was so great to talk to you, Lonnie, and be able to catch up. And I love the new stuff that you're sending me, so continue to keep sending me stuff, and we're digging into the old stuff. We'll definitely check out that Bette Midler rap on YouTube because I haven't seen it, but I'm sure that's going to be fun. And hopefully, you know, when things kind of clear up, we'll be able to actually catch up. We were going to open for you guys in the earlier part of the year, and that didn't happen, so hopefully we can circle back and do something collaboratively together in the new year.
Absolutely. Anytime. That's what I'm all about, is collaborating.
Excellent. Well, we will definitely circle back to you once this is out and done so that you can hear it and give you all the links and everything. And we'll be talking to you real soon.
All right. Thank you so much, brother. You have a beautiful rest of the day.
You too. Take care.
Thank you, Pete.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I had a blast talking with bassist Lonnie Marshall about his legendary band Weapon of Choice and his new Meganet singles that have been coming out this year in 2020. I would like to thank him for being on the podcast, as well as our engineer, Tim Hall, at 1192 Studios, for mixing and mastering this recording. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergroove or anchor.fm/deepergroove. And you can check us out every Tuesday here for more great podcasts. Until then, stick around. We'll tune in next week.